Hey guys, welcome back. BTC Care here. We are back with our weekly Q&A video. This is season 11, episode 16. It's a video, it's a podcast, it's different things to different people. It's whatever you need it to be at the moment in time that you are consuming it, depending on whether or not you have internet connection, something that can read RSS feeds and download stuff for you. It's a lot of things to a lot of people.
Like Howard Stern, we're king of all media. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you make that joke a lot, and it's funny because I think it only gets less accessible. I still do not know Howard Stern for any of his own merits. It's just for the explanation you give.
Right.
But anyways, this is available on a bunch of different podcasting platforms. And if you're on the YouTube video, you can check out links in the description to access it there. But it's also a video, and this week we are going over, it's part of the Season of Lost Challenges, so these are challenge characters that you can no longer get. Today is going to be Antimatter Sinestro. I could say today or this week, because it is whatever day you watch this on, it's today. And whatever week you watch it on, it's this week. But Antimatter Sinestro, his passive is Fear Me, and it's when Sinestro performs Death from Above, two bars of power are drained from the opponent, and the opponent is forced to tag out. He's got 1,200 attack and 1,200 health.
So, a bit of a meta comment then is that we did this season just in time. So out of all the characters that we've been working through alphabetically, Gaslight Batman is no longer on that list. We did him January 23rd for our Q&A, and he is no longer a Lost Challenge character. He is...
Well, we don't know yet.
No, he's back.
Oh, he's back.
That was this week.
That's true, yeah.
We're just guessing who's going to be the next one, whether it's going to shift back to Red Sun Green Lantern, who was supposed to be this week instead of Gaslight Batman, or whether it could be potentially another Green Lantern, because we're looking at the Jessica Cruz pack as our clue. So, I don't know why. I do know why, actually. I say it more as I am boggled at the fact that I let my biases about Antimatter Sinestro spoil him for me. So back in the day when he was first introduced, I don't know if you remember this, but the Assassins, the Assassins gear set was busted.
Yeah.
So that when you, the opponent tagged out, when you forced the opponent to tag out with Antimatter Sinestro, you would drain their power just from the tag out. So you could just do Antimatter Sinestro special one over and over and over again. And then when you couldn't do that anymore, he was much less powerful, much less fun. And I think it's that comparison that made me stop using him. And now that I've been forced to
use him. Because he just feels a lot worse than he did before, regardless of how good he feels at that point. Yeah, it's just disappointing.
I've gained a new appreciation for him in this season of Lost Challenge characters where we've been playing with everybody. We've actually only got five left after this week. And let's see if we can finish them before they introduce them all back into the challenge cycle.
Yeah, because then we'll at least have sort of our notes on them to talk about instead of needing to sort of not be able to talk that competently about the new characters because we're getting the information at the same time you are.
Right. So when we highlight a character, we highlight them as the main damage dealer. That's typically doing special two. So the things that we learn typically revolve around that. And he's got a really good ranged special two. It's got multiple hits. It's got four hits. Any one of the hits can knock out an opponent. And all of them do a reasonable amount of damage. It feels like each of the four hits does about one quarter of the total damage each. So it's well portioned out. It means that you're going to be super effective at handling a full team instead of having to worry about tagging effects. You've got a really good chance that you're going to be protected, whether it's because you hit with your special two or whether the animation completes on the next character. Now, there's an interesting thing. So his special one, so it's not in his passive, right? So when Sinestro performs Death from Above, that's his special one. That's the name of his special one. Two bars of power drained. So it seems like there's only one ability, but what he really does on his special one, and it feels like it's, I think I should have probably checked this before filming this, but I think the amount of damage he does in his special one is not reduced for this effect, but it forces the opponent to tag out as long as they have another teammate.
Mm-hmm.
And it works so much better than I expected. If you commit early, so let's say you've got two bars of power, you force out your opponent and do your next special immediately after forcing that opponent to tag out,
mm-hmm.
you can avoid the incoming opponent's tagging effects by doing another special one.
Mm.
So for example, if Rebirth Raven is the forced tag in, if she tags in, you do your second special one quickly enough, she won't drain you before you've done it.
Nice.
The special one takes up very little in-game time versus real-world time. Real-world time is, you know, you doing the minigame and doing all that and waiting for the animation. But you can actually do the special one quickly enough that you could maybe do... I feel like with some of the invulnerabilities, I'm doing it like five, maybe even more times before on a character who's got no teammates left, they've got immunity kicking in, and you just spam special one. You can do it over and over and over again trying to wear them out.
Yeah.
What else? Claw of Horus is one of those things that you really can't use. I mean, we've talked about this before, where Tantu Totem Master's Death Card are sort of the default, and Claw of Horus can often be an option, but the most important feature of the Claw is Gear Shattering, but you're forcing the opponent out, so any shattered gears are fine when they tag back in.
Mm-hmm.
It's really only useful on the last character standing, so I don't feel like it's worth using up a gear spot for something that you can only use on the last character.
Yeah.
What you're seeing is an interesting change. So normally we do Hawkgirl and either Rebirth Raven or Red Lantern Hal Jordan. What you're seeing is Arkham Knight Harley Quinn. I mean, I've done Rebirth Raven. Rebirth Raven would probably be better because you can really consistently steal power and tag her in. And Arkham Knight Harley Quinn doesn't. But she's kind of fun because she has that chance, because of her passive, to do some damage on the opponent with each tag in and generate some power. But you can see from the footage, it doesn't actually trigger that often. It maybe even in fights where we're going to start trying to do the special one a bunch instead of the special two from Sinestro, it maybe happens at most once a fight, probably once every other fight.
Yeah.
So that's not nearly as good as I'd like. Hawkgirl Prime is like the perfect partner for Antimatter Sinestro. So her passive lets her lock in opponents when we want them to stay and not tag out. And then we want to leave, we can use Sinestro to shove them out.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this control almost about, like, there's a synergy there where we get to control when the opponent tags in or tags out.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's not the most efficient, but there's so many examples where it really eliminates some of the trouble that you might get into. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So if Killing Joke Joker is the first card on the other team, instead of just standing there waiting around for him to tag out or triggering his passive and giving his other two teammates three bars of power, tag in Sinestro, shove him out.
Mm-hmm.
New 52 Shazam. If you shove him out so that you can knock him out last, then his passive doesn't kick in.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's say Batman Ninja Catwoman, if she has Batman Ninja teammates that are going to save her off screen, let's not bother. Shove her out. Knock out her teammate, and then let her come back in. Now, these are all shoving away problems, but on the flip side, let's say we're facing a Batman Ninja character who has Batman Ninja Catwoman off screen, then we can lock them in. And we can also lock in characters if they have teammates with the tagging effect that we don't want.
It's true.
We can shove away Astro Harness and Vulnerability. But the beauty is that I say you're going to be watching it just the minute past now. Around the 8-minute mark. Arkham Knight Batgirl is the best example of using both features of this team. So we use Antimatter Sinestro to shove her teammates away until she gets to be the one in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you use Hawkgirl to lock her in until you can knock out Batgirl to prevent her from using her passive to save her Arkham teammates.
Yeah.
It is so much fun. Like, it's...
when it works, it's really nice.
Oh, and then... because the Arkham Knight Batgirl.
Yeah, it's already passed, but apparently we have an example of this at around the 8-minute mark in the video.
Yeah. And when she saves your teammate, she's stunning you, and so there's a real chance to do a bunch of damage. You've eliminated two of those stuns.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. So, Antimatter Sinestro, a lot of fun. He's only Elite 6 on this team. Elite 7, he'd be even better, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be enough to get the matchups to start at 5,000 instead of starting at 4,500 and only hitting 5,000 battle points on the second fight.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely stellar character. I apologize, Sinestro, for having underestimated and underranked you and not using you sooner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why it's always kind of funny. You know, we might not talk about it this week because we do have some people's S ranks that we're going to discuss definitely coming up. Probably not this week, just for timing. Yeah. But that's why it's kind of funny when people put a lot of stock in what somebody like us say about S rank. Like, obviously, we have a lot of information.
Yeah.
But we are clearly, you know, just being only failable people with limited amount of time on our hands, you have to make sort of relatively quick judgments about a lot of characters because you don't have enough time to play a lot of every character. So our even sort of when we feel like we've given everybody a chance, sometimes you realize you haven't given somebody a chance because you haven't given it enough time to work with.
Right.
So anyways, our first comment this week is we promised we'd talk about it last week. It's from Burke's Homemade Memes. And this is, you know, a relatively, not old, but, you know, it's been weeks. So I guess it is kind of like an older conversation topic because we're having this sort of back and forth about making stuff and talking about, you know, what would be popular versus what you want to make, right? And that kind of dynamic in the way that what is popular is not always what you want to make. And so Burke comes back saying, wow, that is a very long and detailed response. My comment was already pretty long, so was not expecting that. And that's where Burke made their mistake, which was that if the comment is long, it gives us a lot of different things to jump off from. So we're more likely to...
But it's not that... I don't think it's a length so much as just the complexity, right?
That's
true. You touch on a lot of different things. Like, you can spend a lot of time saying one thing, or you can say a lot of different things.
And also, it's cueing topics that we're both, I think, relatively interested and engaged in. So we're more likely to sort of get off on our own tangents with it. So they say, the original comment was kind of me being like, wow, this is so stupid slash unfair. The thing is obviously inversed. More of like a, damn, I hate this job, but you know you still have to be there. And realistically, if you hate it that much, you would have left. Despite my negative idea of algorithm, I am a big beneficiary of it. A majority from my views do come from them. I notice this because I just like numbers. Views are the bonus for me, and it is always there to build my ego. I can definitely use the algorithm to benefit myself, but I choose to make every video to be myself, or at least set up a style that I, or very few, can replicate. I also had friends who were doing this YouTube like me for fun. When they dropped a game called Injustice 2 Mobile on their channel, whenever they upload something else, no one would watch it. It's because people were watching... Well, I assume it's Injustice 2 Mobile. It just says INJ2M. INJ2M videos and not them. For me, no matter what I did, it stayed pretty consistent. Small, but never saw a huge drop. It was because the videos were always about me, not necessarily the content behind it. I think you two also have this, they are watching this for us rather than the game. Because anyone could upload a video about the current challenge character, but not everyone will talk about topics like this. Also, on the topic of we are lucky because we are small, we can do whatever we want. I want to agree and disagree with that. Since I'm small, who cares what I really do? On the flip side, I would still do the things on my own terms even if I became super popular, because I want to at least make something unique, be it good or bad, and me being very stubborn amplifies that. I am so stubborn that I still believe that the Canadian currency is the only one that matters.
What does that have to do with believing? It's true.
All right. you really... That's your recurring bit that I think you're the most happy with.
I just think
You're a big fan.
Well, it was funny. No, because I just noticed when people post up pictures of their game, you see from all over the world, right? Different languages, different currencies and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, I mean, how important is it that the sort of the standard currency is US dollars?
Yeah.
Like how, why does it really matter?
That's true.
I feel like it could just as easily, people could just as easily sort of partner
Canadian with dollar, the Japanese yen.
Why not? Pick something, right? And that the fact that the US dollar has remained sort of the standard currency for so long has given it the US an outsized power that I don't think it deserves when you look at some of the stuff that they're doing on the international stage, right?
Yeah. And so I think one of the interesting points, the first thing I kind of want to start to the bottom because we just talked about is the closest to my head of this comment, right? The whole idea of regardless of what size you were, you just make what you want to make. Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool. I think it's also a lot easier to say when you're small, and not just on sort of a basic level, but on like a practical logistic level. So I'm gonna make up a scenario, but I think it's a plausible one, and I think it is one that happens to a lot of people, right? Which is you start your channel simple, you have no budget, so you're making things that you can do yourself. with your limited skill set, and that's it. Right?
Right, right.
There are things that you might want to do that you specifically cannot do because the money simply isn't there. Right. That you would want to do them as a piece of art. If you, it could be your job, you would do them, but you need to spend, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars, in like time, crew, whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get bigger, right? You start getting sponsorships, right? You're making the money and you finally have the resources to do the things you want to do. Right? The things that take more budget, the things that, you know, more effort.
You say that, I'm thinking Stranger Things.
Yeah. You know, you maybe hire an editor or a team. You know, have people who act in stuff. If it's, you know, you're doing skits or anything acted, you have, you know, maybe locations that you scout, you have whatever. Or even if it's, you still make the videos by hand, you might have, you know, somebody to help you manage your like emails and sponsorships, your deadlines, right? You might have like a hire, or at least at the very minimum, if you're doing sponsorships, they are predicated on you reaching a certain level of success and engagement, right? To continue to get more sponsorships.
Mm-hmm.
Your metrics in that sense become tied to your livelihood. Now, if you want to start making exactly whatever it is you want to make at that point, doing something that would not necessarily get views or make money would be potentially damaging to your livelihood, your ability to secure future sponsors, if other people rely on you, potentially your team, right? It matters a lot more. And if, you know, while you're not doing it for your full-time job, while it is not a source of income for you, you can do whatever you want. But when you are making it as part of your livelihood, videos that do less well can impact the performance of your future videos based off of the YouTube algorithm. A lot of that becomes, you know, you are in this situation where the resources that you have access to are not promised to you, right? There's something you have at that moment.
You have to hustle.
You have to hustle.
It's the hustle culture.
And so there is something to be said where if you are getting enough views by doing exactly what you want perfectly every time, that is great. But if you are not, and if, you know, what you love is making something, right? Mm-hmm. It is much more reasonable to go, okay, well, I will make the thing that is going to let me keep doing this as a profession, because I would rather compromise a little bit in terms of making something that I'm slightly less interested in than compromise a lot in terms of not being able to do this for money and having to do something else, with the majority of my time, and make this go back to a side project. And I think some people would still do exactly what they want no matter what. And, you know, some people would find like a balance in maybe their work is one type of creation and their play is another type of creation. But I think definitely, even, you know, if your videos stay the exact same amount of effort and the exact same amount of resources to create, if you have more money, there's also always the risk of, you know, lifestyle creep, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way that, you know, the numbers going up, that getting a lot of engagement feels really good, you kind of establish a baseline relatively quickly. So the numbers going down after a while will feel bad, right? If your numbers go down to where you were, you know, a year or two ago when you were only fractionally as popular, that's going to hurt, right?
Yeah.
On some level, you know, people leaving you in droves is not going to be a super nice feeling. So I think it's always good to have sort of principles if you're doing this to do it because you love it. And I think the most important thing about doing something like this is to do it in a way that is relatively sustainable. Because if, you know, you're trying to grow at any cost and it is not something that you can keep up, you don't know how your audience is going to change when you stop being able to keep it up and when you actually make the decision to not keep it up. So I think doing it in a way that is consistent and manageable and healthy for you to the best of your knowledge, because also things in your life are going to change. And like any job that you do, there's going to be times in your life where what felt consistent, you know, before is no longer consistent. Maybe if there's like a death in the family or, you know, like personal health problems or whatever, right? So it's good to start out doing something that you are passionate about, because that is what will let you keep making it. But I also think, to some extent, no plan survives contact with the enemy. To some extent, there's just too many variables and too much stuff.
I've heard just strategy lasts only until you get hit in the face.
Mm. Yeah.
So let me dovetail a little bit from that. I think it was Neil Gaiman who said something to the effect that part of his success was basically making stuff that he would be happy with.
Yeah.
And it's that same idea that if you try too much to cater to what you think people want, then you are less likely to do the stuff that you can uniquely provide that nobody else can. And I think what you've just given us, what you've just told everybody, is the best argument for universal basic income. Mm. Because to me, the underlying premise is that there is a huge amount of art that just doesn't reach its audience.
Yeah.
But the flip side, not the flip side so much, maybe the corollary is there's also a huge amount of potential for art that never gets made because people are too busy trying to survive. Mm-hmm. So even you can find examples in artists that you like. And to me, the ones that come to mind the easiest are mid-list authors,
yeah,
who have to have a second job because they need to have healthcare. Yeah. They need to...
But just how much more and how much better the stuff they could have put out would be if they could dedicate every part of them to it.
So it would be, to me, that would be the potential for a real flourishing of both the supply. That's the wrong word. I mean, that's more of a business word, but the amount of beautiful things being created and the ability to appreciate them so that you would deal with both problems at the same time, right? You'd get more art, but then you'd also have the chance to consume more of it.
Yeah.
And those, so that the people who are making the really good stuff have a better chance of finding their audience.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's kind of funny because I've now released the video that I was talking about, right? Because it's been long enough. It's been out for a couple of weeks. So it's sort of settled into about where it's going to be. And it's got 24 views and they're mostly from people I know. And for context, the last Q&A has 344 views, which again is, you know, not huge by any stretch of the imagination, but way more than 10 times as many, a whole order of magnitude more. And I feel so much more proud and and honestly happy and satisfied with that 24 view video I made than, you know, and not to say I didn't enjoy making the Q&A, because I do. We enjoy them quite a lot, which is the only reason why we're here, right? We're not making even fraction of minimum wage.
That and our patrons too, actually.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, we're not getting, just honestly, we're not getting paid enough to do it if we didn't like it, right? So I like it and I enjoy it, but there's a level of pride in the other one. And I feel each of those sort of 24 views so much more acutely than, and, you know, and those are also easier views because I told people about it. If I, you know, told all my friends, hey, go watch this, you know, Q&A, I would have more views on that one too. So it's not even like it's 24 random people that I don't know or aren't invested in me. It's almost exclusively people who I know. And I said, hey, you should check this out. I think it would be interesting. I made this. Do you want to see it? Right.
Yep.
But I still really feel good about that. And so I think ultimately, yeah, there is a real blessing to being able to put your time and effort and energy into something and just be proud of it, to not have those other considerations. Because if I was doing this for my job, pride is a luxury, right?
Sure.
That's a luxury of not needing it, right? So, you know, it's not just the fact that there's not that many people watching this. It's also that I'm not, like, financially destitute. If I had no money and I was struggling, I also wouldn't have the resources or opportunity to spend time to make something that I just wanted to be proud of. I would need to be spending my time figuring out how to get myself to a more comfortable, stable place. But I do think there is a real luxury that you get from doing something in your free time and being small. And when you are making something that you enjoy the process of making it, there's something really sort of clean and pure about that. Because also, there, you know, psych research shows that when you give, like, kids rewards, when you have, and for people in general, when there's external reward structures in place for something, you know, for the example, if you have like kids coloring just for fun versus coloring and then they get a toy afterwards, right? Or they get like a snack, that they see that the kids lose motivation to color if they were given something for it and then the next time they don't get anything. So I think that's like a really important thing, is that even if all of your motivation is internal right now, if you started making a bunch of money for it, it does become a little bit about what you get out of it.
There's at least the potential for it, right? Especially if you become dependent on what you get out of
it. Yeah. And so I think that is, on some level, that is part of why some YouTubers do end up burning out, which is because they start doing it because they love it so much. And then you start getting rewarded for it. And then it becomes your livelihood. And then so much of it becomes about that sort of reward cycle, that you are chasing those rewards, whether or not you want to. And, you know, I think some people, you know, whether it's because they just have a different psychological profile or because they are better at managing it or if they thought more about it or whatever, I have no real clue why, right?
Right.
I don't have that full insight, are better or worse at sort of managing that and keeping that sort of love and passion alive. But I think it's one of those things that happens almost no matter what, and mostly against your will. So it's just one of those things where you kind of don't know how good you have it until it's gone. And there is something to be said for being little nobodies who can make whatever they want.
Yeah.
And I think that segues perfectly into our next comment, which comes from Methuselah Honeysuckle 4813. And they say, wow, please stick to injustice. I don't appreciate clicking on a video that says it's about one thing and then having to listen to 10 minutes of something completely unrelated, especially someone else's political opinions. And then, in a separate paragraph, they say, that said, I really appreciate your injustice content. It is the best out there.
I might be a bit biased, but I think it is too.
Yeah. This is like one of those comments that is like almost a little, it's a little baffling, right? I know that I think some people have a different philosophical understanding of politics than we do.
See, I thought you were going to head in a different direction. I thought you were going to say different people have a different understanding of what social interactions actually are or parasocial interactions are.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first thing is that, no, we're going to make this exactly what we want because there wouldn't be injustice content if we didn't get to do that, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We're doing this because we like it, and I will make Methuselah Honeysuckle a deal, which is if you finance this operation and give us enough money that we are at least making, I'll go easy on you and say minimum wage for this. If you will pay us each minimum wage to make this content.
Oh, both of us?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Okay. Both of us, for all the time we spend doing it, including the recording video and everything, you can veto any conversation topic you want. If you're giving me a minimum wage, but only for the stuff that you're paying, and then I'll probably still make other videos where I do politics stuff. But if you're like, I want, you know, 1 hour of this a week, plus whatever time it takes to make it, to have no politics, and then you can have your politics corner on a separate piece of content. If you want to sponsor our content that way, this is not a general offer, by the way. This is only for Methuselah Honeysuckle. Then I will do it for you.
So now that you're saying that, I feel like we're giving a really good deal to our patrons because I feel like they have a bit of an outsized kind of influence on us considering we're not getting close to minimum wage with that either.
Well, it's because I like them. I don't know Methuselah Honeysuckle, and my first introduction to them is shut up. Also, I like it. It kind of feels like nagging, right? Where they try to bring you down a level.
Right.
And then they try to say something nice to you where you go, oh, well, maybe they're really on my side and maybe they're the only people on my side because they're willing to be honest, but nobody else is with me.
To try to act like they're
our friends.
On our side.
Yeah.
And to say things in a way that make us want their approval, but you have to have enough negative to redirect our behavior.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I don't know. Because my sort of philosophical understanding and approach to what politics is that politics is something that affects everybody. And there's kind of politics in everything.
Everything is political. This is the funny thing I've heard sometimes where people say, keep politics out of art.
Yeah.
Everything is political. The best stuff is political. Mm. The only time you can get away with saying something is not political is when it's vanilla. Oh, and you know what? The only people that can afford to say that with any kind of, not honesty, but feel and actually sort of believe it, even though it's not true, are people in the position of power.
Mm.
It's the dominant culture that's able to do that, right?
And even if there's nothing that seems outwardly political about a piece of media, it was still made. It was made by people in a system, right? And, you know, maybe that is getting a little too abstract for people, but you know, it's like what we were talking about earlier with universal basic income, right?
Yeah.
The type of stuff that is made is directly influenced by the system that it was made in. I saw a really good joke recently, and I wish I remembered the comedian's name, but I don't. And the joke was, he said, people are always saying, hey man, stop making stuff political. And they come to me and they say, like, I don't want politics in it because, you know, I'm not a minority. I'm not gay. I'm not, living in a dictatorship. I don't breathe the air that's getting polluted or the water that's getting polluted. I don't live in an arid place that is going to be affected by climate change or a place near sea that is going to be affected by the rising sea water. So I don't care about environmental stuff. And he builds this whole huge list really sort of quickly and succinctly with a great comedic timing building up basically where you realize that there is no person on earth who is not in some way directly impacted by a political system. Right. He goes, and when you put it that way, it's hard to argue with them, right? Maybe politics doesn't really impact you. And so it's one of those things where, you know, politics is just ideas, right? It's ideas and implementations, really, mm-hmm. right? And so to some level, like the fact that we can make a whole YouTube channel about injustice, right?
Right.
That's not politically neutral. Nothing is totally politically neutral.
Right.
Right. The whole, you know, dynamic of injustice is this sort of multiverse, vying for power, right? Like there's on like a really sort of like fundamental level there, when you're talking about sort of like conflict and struggle, to make it apolitical is to purposefully scrub out what the normal like mechanisms for those things are. Right?
Right, right.
So if you're making your thing purposefully further away from real life politics, that even also is like a statement being made by the developers way or another.
So many things come to mind. I mean, the first example is Sandman, the TV show they did for Netflix.
Yeah.
And how, I'll give you an example of that, where people were complaining about a couple casting choices. They're complaining that the actor they picked for Death was black.
Mm-hmm.
Even though in the comic book, she was canonically based on a person named Cinnamon, who was white and was goth and had all that makeup and stuff. And the second one was complaining that John Constantine's character was replaced with Johanna Constantine.
Yeah.
And what people don't seem to get, like if you'd actually read the source material, Johanna Constantine was her own character.
Yeah.
And the way they do sometimes in movies so that they have not as many characters and
they make it less complicated. They turn two into one.
Right. So they let a different character take on some of the plot elements of a different character. And the other part is that canonically, all the Endless appear to the people who are seeing them in forms that they recognize.
Yeah.
So
none of them really have a consistent form.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there have been times where, especially actually the namesake, Sandman, Orpheus, has appeared, especially when we went to hell, mm-hmm. as a black man.
Yeah.
So the people complaining about, and the criticism that they level is that somehow it's not true to the original comic book, when clearly the fact that they're even complaining shows me that they don't really have a good understanding of what the original was.
And it's also very silly when people are complaining about politics or praising non-politics in stuff, because what they're doing is politics, right? Yeah. They are using their voices and they're trying to express their opinion and they're trying to create outward change in other people and other stuff. Right?
Yeah.
And so the implication for some reason that like making minorities visible in media, because that is for some reason like often the topic of conversation that people are really complaining about, is political. And to be fair, I think it is political. But I think any casting choice is political. I think casting, you know, a white man in any role is just as political as casting any other sort of a straight cis white man. It just as political as casting somebody of any other race,
right,
or culture or sexuality or any of it. It's right. It's all you're always saying something with it.
Right. And the only reason that you can with a straight face claim that it's not political is because you identify with the power structure.
And because historically it was done that way.
Right.
When it is the things that they claim as being not political are just matching previous politics.
Right.
They're just matching dominant norms and structures in a time and an area, right? So, like, you know, in the past, Hollywood was very white and very male-dominated and all of this other stuff.
But not always. So I will put the name of a Japanese actor mm-hmm. who, during the silent film era, was apparently, like, a huge star, was making more money than anybody else, had his own studio and stuff, and I learned about this maybe 7 years ago when Martha Wells gave her a world fantasy speech and talked about, it was called Unbury the Future, and it was about secret histories, but not the kind of secret histories that we like with Tim Powers, where you fit imaginary events into real world events, but secret histories where it's stuff that happened, but because nobody talks about it, it ends up getting erased a little bit. I mean, it's sort of the, what happened to the, oh, and she mentions this too, the Mac, or were they engineers, or the, did, you know, Hidden Figures? Were they engineers? I feel like they were engineers, that they did all the calculations that
were for like NASA and the space race. Words were that young black woman. There's that
famous, number of them.
But there's that famous picture of her standing next to her calculations.
Oh, the stack.
And it's like, it's like two thirds of her height or something like that of just like books filled of actual calculations.
So maybe not engineers, maybe mathematicians.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They were literally computers.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Back when that was a job and not a machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're a little bit running a little bit over time, but I feel like I want to squeeze this last one in because it's all part and parcel of the same kind of things we've been talking
about. Okay, sure. So Jaguar King 2892 says, "Hey, just want to say that I'm having a really hard time now and have been for the past 6 to 8 months. Your podcast has consistently been one of the few things helping me to get my mind off things. Thank you and keep doing what you're doing."
Thank you, Jaguar King, actually.
Yeah. Not just because what you're asking for us is easier, but I am much more willing to listen to you to tell us to keep doing what we're doing than I am to somebody else that says, shut up. Don't talk about politics anymore.
And you know what? You're missing the whole point too. I mean, this is a video. Turn off the sound. I watch Instagram all the time without sound on.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure I'm missing a bunch of stuff, but it's just as funny when I find some of the funny videos.
Yeah.
And the Injustice gameplay, I got to tell you, it's pretty stellar. And I'm not just saying because I'm the one filming it.
Yeah, I guess the important part is that there's enough stuff out there that you'll be able to find something that you like. And for all that we've talked about, the algorithm, whatever, doing stuff for ourselves or stuff that we're proud of, it is incredibly gratifying and incredibly cool to have, to know that, you know, somebody who felt like they needed something, right? I don't think it needed to be us. I'm not under any illusion that... we are the only people who could provide you the ability to take your mind off things. But I am very glad that we were able to fit that role for you.
Okay, so what you just said, I got to stick this in because it made me think of Say Anything. Have you seen Say Anything, the movie?
John Cusack and Ellie Sky? Yeah.
So there's a scene. All right, so spoiler alert if you haven't seen it.
Right?
No, that's not. That's what everybody. All right, so that is Say Anything. Sorry, that's not what I'm talking about. But that's the thing people remember. But there's a bunch of, there's some really great moments in it. So if you haven't seen it, you should watch it. It's a great movie, Cameron Crowe. But there's a moment where, after they've broken up, John Cusack's character, so spoiler alert, right? So he's kickboxing and gets distracted by Oni Sky. He gets kicked in the face and she's all upset. She wants to make up with him and he's stopping and say, "Hey, whoa. Do you just need somebody or do you want me?"
Yeah.
And he says, "You know what? Forget it. I don't even care."
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that we are Jaguar King somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, cause I think people will find comfort when they need it. And I think it's actually more and not less reassuring. That if it wasn't us, it probably would have been somebody else.
Oh yeah, sure. And you know what? It doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't even matter. I'm happy.
Happy
to
and
be
honored.
Somebody something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I think that's a great note of positivity to end things off on. So, you know, thank you, Jaguar King, for that message. Very cool. And we are honored. Yeah. We are appreciative as well. I can't say as appreciative as you, less or more, because I honestly
not,
couldn't tell you.
It's not doesn't a contest. Matter. It's not a pissing contest. That's true. Is what I was like to say.
But I do like winning when I can help it. Anyways, so to finish up, we'd like to give a huge thank you to all of our lovely patrons on Patreon. That is
Michael DeVries,
Irvin Ruiz,
Hoshi127,
and Nora Klimek, who are supporting us on the credit level,
and 5x5,
who is supporting us on the gratitude tier. So thank you so much for your support. I forgot that we're going to do the back and forth because we did syllables last time. So you caught me unaware a little bit, even though it was my bit, I suggested it.
Yes.
So we'd like to give a huge thank you to those folks. And then also huge thank you to everybody who stayed tuned in this whole time, made it all the way to the end of the video with us. I know we have a little bit of time to cut from the start, a couple seconds, but almost 40 whole minutes. That's a feat. If you sat down with us for 40 minutes, hung out, listened to us talk at you without the ability to respond at all, that's super cool. And also thank you if you leave a comment and decide to sort of be part of this conversation.
Join us in this conversation.
Yeah. That would be awesome. So yeah, thank you to all of you, and we'll see you next time.
Komoda.